Okay, good. We'll get started today. There may be some more people joining us as we go. This is actually the 200th PLC that we've had over the years. We do these every 2 weeks, and same time, same place. The theme that we've been working on is entities and sustainability and leveraging. And the reason we're interested in this is, of course, there's a little bit budget decreases and changes at EPA. We're not sure whether funds will become more sparse, or we do know that there are some changes in the offerings, maybe perhaps, and they're still formulating their decisions, but they may go every 2 years for RFPs, but then hopefully have more grantees. That's one option. And of course, they've delayed the request for proposals till the beginning of next year. So it's not that much of a change in that respect. No, normally they come out towards the end of this year. They just moved it a few months, bumped it a few months into the beginning of next year. But it gives us an opportunity at this point to think about how we want to organize, how we may want to submit our proposals, what kind of program we want to get started. When we get closer to the announcement of the RFP, we'll get into some nuts and bolts in terms of responding to these requests for proposals, things like doing a good labor market assessment, how to do set up a recruitment program, student services, recruitment placement, curriculum, that type of thing. But this gives us a good chance to sit back a little bit, whether you're an existing grantee or re-upping or thinking of becoming a new grantee, gives you an opportunity of how you may want to organize your program. Even if you're an existing grantee and going to go up for a re-up, it's probably important and worthwhile re-examining your partners, how you may want to submit what you've done in the past to become one more sustainable, more competitive, and develop better leveraging. So those have been the themes that we've been doing recently. We talked originally with Workforce, Recycle Force, that developed a profit and a nonprofit to support the nonprofit. We recently talked about the Merrimack Valley WIB, and we're going to focus that today among some other things. Let's first talk about what's happening in Washington and in HMTRI. Heather, any news for us?
Well, from the HQ side of stuff on Washington, really nothing new to announce at this point. Just, you know, still waiting to hear any announcements for dates or anything like that coming up. On the HMTRI side of things, we did want to share with you, we've had a couple of inquiries about the train the trainer and the disaster training response. The disaster training program that's put on by our partners at PEAT. And so they did want to share with you guys that they do have, the dates are available online, and you can actually go ahead and even start to register for their disaster training that they're going to be holding in Florida in the early weeks of January 2019. If you want to explore a little bit more about those, you can go to nationalpeat.org and head over to the events tab to see some of the different trainings that they're going to be offering throughout the year. Again, that's nationalpete.org, and we'll have that listed in the notes as well for you guys.
Right. We'll send those notes out on Friday morning, and it'll have all the websites and how to get them. Anything else, Heather, at this point?
I think that's about all that I have on my end.
Great. We're going to also, in the notes, link you into our Brownfields Toolbox. We've got everything up there now. Many of you who went to the all grantee meeting, which we hold once a year with all the grantees and interested grantees, we took a lot of pictures. We didn't, but one of our participating grantees took tons of pictures, and those pictures are up there, and I'll put the links to all of those. In addition to all the pictures at the workshop, we've got all the PowerPoint presentations, the agenda, all the participants with their contact information. It's a fairly valuable resource, particularly if you want to find out who's really active right now. Just about all the grantees were there, regional coordinators and some guests from EPA. All their contact information is there. I always print that out in case I want to call someone up or email them, it's all there. And that's all going to be up on the brownfieldstoolbox.org. And we'll put those links there. It might be worth exploring for you. Before we get started, and I have one question that came to us recently, but I'd just like to ask is, does anyone have any overriding questions or general questions about what's happening in EPA with the Build Act and with the Environmental Workforce Development Program? Is anyone out there, are you kind of in the dark or wondering what's really going on? Anything like that? To fill you in a little bit, of course, the Build Act, there's two Build Acts. There's one in the Department of Transportation and one in EPA, and we're concerned with the EPA Build Act that was passed during the budget negotiations in the spring. It lays out a legislative pathway for what is happening in the EPA with regard to brownfields. And I think the good news there is in the Act is that it allows for training and technical assistance to help brownfields develop their cleanup regimens and to do their identification. And it does put us in the Act in terms of saying, well, there's a role for training and to help develop these brownfields. Of course, the second part of this is always appropriations. There's two sides of government. There's the authorization bills, and then there's the appropriations bill. And that's, we're not sure where we're at on that. That's always negotiating. And then once the money gets into EPA, there's a certain amount of latitude on how they want to divvy that money up. So in terms of the Brownfields job training program, it's authorized and it's in the bill in terms of how they're going to appropriate money and how they're going to divvy that money out. Of course, in the past, they've also gotten money from other program offices, Office of Water, Office of Toxic Substances, that kick into the pot so they could have more grantees. So generally, the way they operate is they have a budget that's determined in EPA, how much is going to go to the job training program, and then they try to scrounge more money up from other program offices in EPA. And once they have this pot of money, whatever it is, $3 million, $2 million, $5 million, whatever it is, then they start requesting proposals, which will probably be in the first part of the year, maybe in February or so. And then they have very strict ranking criteria, and we'll talk about who's eligible to apply. And then they have a very objective ranking criteria. It's kind of graded on the curve. And they give out these $200,000 grants till all the money's gone. So it's fairly simplistic that way. And the number of grants that are given just depends on how much money they get. If they get $3 million, there'll be 15 grants around that of $200,000. So they go from, when we first started, there might have been just a few grants, and they went to 10, 12, 15, 17. We're hoping there'll be a lot more this year because they're talking about maybe not doing a RFP every year, but maybe every 2 years. So there's a lot of flexibility going on, and if that's the case, they may get a bigger appropriation. So we'll have to see as that comes along. The things that we know now is that, one, it's the authorization is there, and from whatever thing we've heard from EPA, they're planning on doing an RFP after the first of the year, beginning of the year. Those grants will be awarded probably spring or beginning of the summer. There's certain procedures, and you have to go through training and certain work plans that have to be accepted. The money would probably not start flowing. It would be flowing out of the next year's budget, which is after October 1st of next year. So then the checks would start rolling in where you're authorized to spend after October 1. Of 2019 next year. So that's pretty much the schedule. They do allow you to spend money once you've been accepted, usually 90 days before the money is authorized to be drawn. But At this point, this is kind of where we're at. And as I said earlier, we're at a good place now of what kind of entity we may want to reorganize or organize as. And in fact, we did have a question this week of, and there was a pretty direct question. What are my odds? What's the best entity to submit our proposal to EPA for best chances of getting a grant? Would it be a city, state government, tribe, a county, a college, a community development corporation? Which of those would be our best bet? And of course, the response to that is, it really doesn't matter what entity that you submit under. It's more a question of how you respond to that proposal. And of course, that has to do largely with sustainability, the ability to you to sustain your program, the amount you could leverage the funds that EPA gives you, the quality of your program administratively, and how you answer those questions are very important. So given the fact that it really doesn't matter how you submit, today we're going to look at, and we've been looking at some of these different types of entities. Today we're going to look at governmental types of entities, including colleges. In 2 weeks from now, we're going to be talking about nonprofits. So we basically have governmental, quasi-governmental types of organizations, and then we have nonprofits. I would say that nonprofits dominate the grantees. Out of about 50 active grantees, more than half are nonprofits. There are about 6 grantees that are active that are cities. There are 2 that are counties. We've got 4 community development corporations, which we'll talk about. We've got about 7 colleges, community colleges, that type of entity. And we've got a tribe. We usually have 1 or 2 tribes that are active in the program. And these are all sanctioned as people that could submit proposals. And of course, nonprofits, we'll talk about in another session. Who can't apply would be basically your for-profit organizations, your corporations, your trade schools that are incorporated. If you're a nonprofit trade school, you'd be okay. You could submit as a nonprofit. So the question now is, how do we submit? Do we want to go with a city, county? Do we want to link up with a community development corporation? Do we want to link up with a college to submit this, or tribe? And let's talk about that a little bit. First, let's talk about cities. Cities, states, counties, tribes. These are the purest form of governments that are eligible to apply for these grants. Last PLC, we talked about Merrimack Valley Workforce Investment Board. And this is a very common type of government entity, usually part of a county. And there are many of them. Every state has a WIB, as we call them, a Workforce Investment Board. They were established quite a while ago in the 90s, but there's new legislation, WIOLA, out of the Department of Labor. The WIBs are charged with being very entrepreneurial and seeking grant funds. WIBs have definitely got some advantages that we talked about in the last PLC. They can perform many leveraging functions, whether it's recruitment, whether it's student services, whether it's screening, placement, testing. Every WIB is different, as we talked about last session. Some are really good and some are really bad, to be honest. Some WIBs don't do very much. Some WIBs really reach out. And we do have WIBs in our program, Merrimack Valley for one. We also have others like Tacoma, City of Tacoma. While it's the city submitted the grant for the city, the WIB is taking charge of that. So often WIBs will go out on their own. They'll write the proposals. There's other definite benefits of that that other city agencies have. They certainly have deep pockets. They also have deep benches. They have access to a lot of services that maybe a nonprofit might not have, or even a community development corporation, because they're right there in city government. You get a city like Rochester, New York, that they're very much linked to their contractors. They use their contractors. They ask their contractors to consider their graduates. They have access to the mayor's office. They have access to all of the facilities of that city. So it's a very strong benefit in terms of leveraging, in terms of getting access to facilities, in terms of leveraging other city agencies, whether it's health and human services, or if it's a transportation issue, community development issue, those WIBs, or which also include city governments, have that type of access. There are states who submit a larger, less prevalent, it's mostly cities or counties, but states have considered that, where it's the problem with a state agency is it's too broad an area. This program tends to focus on target communities, which would be more on the city or the county level. I would say the most prevalent types of submitters, entities that actually submit the grant, would be the WIBs, although there might be other departments. So we've got some examples besides Merrimack Valley would be Richmond, California, Pittsburgh, California. We have King County, which is a county who was a grantee for several years and then dropped out of the program and then reemerged in the program. We've got Nye County. We have a tribe, which would be a governmental organization. Similar, a small city, may not have quite the resources a city might have. Port Gamble is a tribe. We usually have one or two tribes in the program. All is not perfect with city environmental workforce development job training programs. One probably you could imagine would be the bureaucracy that might be associated with the city government running a program. One issue that's come up over the years that has kind of gotten people by surprise is contracting policies. Some of these other entities we talk about can do, they're fairly nimble and they're free to do other things, and particularly in contracting. Cities may need approval by the city council to before they can send out for a contract. There might be a lot of bureaucracy through city council in terms of running the program. So I would say if they're one of the comments that has been negative towards cities as entities is perhaps that bureaucracy. There may be some political concerns of where you want to put your target group. If you want to have your target group in one part of the city, but there are some strong council members who really want it to be in another part of the city, or they might be in their district, you may have some conflicts of how you want to do this. An advantage might be they would guide you towards the opportunity zones that are popping up now. There'll be many opportunity zones where other services are given to the city in opportunity zones, and these are target groups in the city that are underserved and need real help. They can apply and have preferences to certain federal funds. So one advantage of working with the city is the mayor's office can coordinate his opportunity zones and include the Brownfields job training program as part of that opportunity zone. So it's another way cities are able to leverage these programs. There may be administrative restrictions. For example, a city may have to run things through a number of different city offices and in terms of accounting, in terms of, as I said, contracting. It may be, you may find yourself much more restrictive. There are some subtle other subtle issues like administration. Who do you need to report to? And you may run into some political issues of who the mayor decides or the county decides to administer and take that job. You might run into patronage, that type of thing. One of the problems with cities is they, you may be less likely to go out and seek outside partners, the goodwills of the world or the youth core programs. While they could coordinate that with you, they might you might have less incentive to go out to some of these nonprofits that are out there that you could leverage. So cities have positives and negatives, and if you're interested in working with a city government, I would go into the mayor's office, community development, find out if there's a place for your program, and you may get a very good reception, particularly from a workforce investment board or another organization within that city who feels that they need a job training program. And of course, these are politically very positive. Most graduations are attended by someone from the mayor's office, and it's a very positive program in most communities. It's a chance for photo ops and a chance for the city to advertise what they're doing for their citizens. So again, the city, states, tribes, the counties, it's a very good approach as a submitting identity entity. I wouldn't say they give you any benefit in terms of that the acceptance criteria. It depends who's going to be writing the grant. And that's another thing that the city might provide, or they have tremendous experience in working with federal programs and grant programs. They may have very good grant writers that could work with you. But evidence says that the preponderance of grantees are nonprofits, about six city governments that are doing an excellent job. And they're very good at leveraging resources and providing some sustainability. Similar to city government, state and county, but I put them in a separate category, were community development corporations. And for those of you not familiar with community development corporations, they're actually nonprofits, and they're not connected to the city. They're kind of quasi, they're somewhere in between a city government and a pure nonprofit, because they work closely. They're often organized through legislative mandates. They may get funds pretty much written into city budgets or county or state government budgets. They're, I would say, a quasi pure between pure nonprofits that are out on their own and city governments. Clearly, the advantages of the community development corporations surround themselves about their autonomy. They are not in the city. They're not subject to the city procurement processes or the city administrative processes. They have a tremendous amount of leverage. Often you see them have to do with housing. They have to do with working in community groups to better in better communities. We haven't had a lot of CDCs. We have Climb on the line. Are you there, Lauren?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about your program?
So I am the program manager of the environmental and conservation side of the development corporation. So what I do is I work off a grant using some BP oil spill money, and we go out and we work with government partners such as U.S. Forestry, DMR, all the refuge with U.S. Fish and Wildlife to do some conservation work for them to kind of better habitats, take care of invasive species, stuff like that. Now, Climb has, we have a couple programs. We work off a Youth Build grant right now. So we have a, we also have a WIOA program. It's a workforce training, so it helps them get their GED or their high school diploma, and then other trainings that they would need for to get a job. We also have some vocational type training for culinary, so that they can get in the food service industry, or construction, so they can get with a construction job. We kind of help them get the training, the basic trainings that they need, and help them further their future into the workforce to help them out.
You're, I look at CDCs as being much more entrepreneurial than government organizations, and you're working closely with them, but you're not left hanging on your own, because you can put together different programs, work with WIBS and WIOLA programs, apply for government grants of all sorts, and, and put them together. It's interesting because you're doing environmental work. A lot of them do work with housing development and housing rehabilitation.
So we work with Habitat for Humanity, and we also have an AmeriCorps that works out of Climb. And they go do, and they do some environmental work.
The idea of going into environmental workforce, was it something that just evolved out of your CDC? Your CDC was in existence doing some work, and then it sounds to me like you fell on this opportunity to maybe enhance your workforce development.
Well, Climb came out of Hurricane Katrina. It was originally a company called IRD, and it was like a relief foundation for hurricanes. And then from that, evolved into Climb. And so our environmental side came from, we worked closely with another, kind of like a CDC, in Florida. And they just let us know of this grant and this opportunity of like a, becoming a conservation corps. So we're an accredited corps. So we have those rules and regulations to abide by through them. But they gave us that opportunity. We put it all together. There had been just a little bit of environmental work. We just saw that the ecosystems on the Gulf Coast needed some help, and we got with different organizations like the Land Trust to kind of help out just a little bit.
Yeah, the nice thing about it is that autonomy that you have. But the advantages too is you've got the grant writers, you've got the fiscal administration already in place, so you have a lot of the things that someone who's just trying to start up wouldn't have. And it definitely, and the advantage of you over government is you can reach out, you can go out and make partners, you can go find other CDCs, you could, if there's a goodwill out there, you could approach them, you run your own shop, you don't have to go through city council to do things. It's a very nimble, I think of all of, aside from totally nonprofit, it's a very nimble way to approach it. We have a couple others. Well, Coalfields is kind of like a CDC, which we had on a few sessions ago. We've got another redevelopment agency out there. And it's interesting to see how CDCs may evolve in the future into workforce development, because I think they have all these advantages of infrastructure in place, and you could add on the environmental workforce training. And do you target a particular community or?
We're the only conservation corps in Mississippi. So we do focus on the five coastal counties in Mississippi. And the farthest we go up is probably about not even mid-Mississippi to we work within DeSoto National Forest.
Mm-hmm. The probably if there's a downside, and there's not a lot of downsides, but I would say you're more dependent on grants than, say, a governmental organization might be.
We are, and finding specific grants to fund things, it can get a little difficult, but we're always looking, we're always finding new ways to help fund our programs and really help the community that we serve, which is at-risk youth.
The nice thing also about CDCs is sometimes because they're so varied, for example, there's one in Cleveland that does, they have a laundry. They take care of all of the laundry needs of all the hotels in Cleveland. But they have other businesses, kind of like Coalfields, and your graduates might go to work either part-time or full-time for one of the other groups within the CDC, which is
right.
Another great idea. I think it's strength in numbers that you have.
It is. We have actually a kind of a restaurant next to us that's within the same building. They're separate, and sometimes our culinary students go and work for her.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. If you're looking at what kind of entity you may want to submit under, it may be worth looking at CDCs. There's lots of them. There's thousands of them. I think there's 6,000 across the country. Some are larger than others. They're all different sizes, everything from organizing in a church to a housing CDC. It might have 500 or 600 employees. So, but you may look in your community for an organization like CLIMB, who has kind of touched their toes in some environmental or conservation types of things, and approach them and say you're considering submitting a proposal for this EPA grant, and would they be interested in expanding their reach to include environmental training? So I would strongly think about that if you're in this, again, this early organizational stage. Now, if you're set on being a nonprofit or some other entity, you can certainly partner with the CDC. And as Lauren said, I think you're very open to developing partnerships with other organizations. Well, the last thing, and we try to keep these a half hour, so I'll go kind of quick. Last thing, I wanted to include schools, colleges. Now, these aren't governmental organizations, but they're not totally nonprofit either. They're in this quasi entity stage, whether it's a university, community college, it could be a trade school, it's a nonprofit. These have definite advantages. We have 7 colleges who are active right now in our program. They don't dominate it. Early on in the beginning of this program, we had mostly community colleges. They had some definite advantages because they were educational institutions. They had staff on board. They had grant developers. They had accounting systems in place. They were used to submitting federal grants. So all of those things that a college or community college can bring to the table are kind of obvious. We'll put those in the notes, but they definitely have some advantages. They often sometimes even have WIBs within the college. So the college may be the Workforce Investment Board. So they can bring lots of leveraging for anywhere from in-kind professors teaching courses to curriculum development to marketing to using facilities, having equipment. Particularly colleges that already have an environmental program. There's a whole lot of that you could bring to a grant proposal that a college might have. I would point up, let's point up some of the negatives on college, and probably bureaucracy, I would say, might be one of the ones on the top of the list, different than community development corporations, maybe not as bureaucratic as a governmental organization, but you still have a bureaucracy within the college. The bigger the college, the more bureaucracy you might have. Colleges are usually divided into like a business and industry or non-credit side and a credit side. Sometimes the wall between the credit side of the house and the non-credit side is pretty substantial. The credit people may not want to necessarily cross over to the non-credit side. Definitely one of the issues you might run into. You might run into administrative issues within the college, whether it's accounting, whether it's their decisions in terms of who administers the programs, those types of things. Heather, you could speak to us about community colleges. How do you find working at Eastern Iowa with this program?
You know, I really enjoy it. It does give us access to a lot more resources, as you mentioned, than what we otherwise might not be able to do. There's some fantastic grant writers that we can ask for assistance from. We have a whole department worth of individuals that are willing to work with us and help us, as well as just access, right? You know, people know people. And so being able to have that large web of resources and connections is also very, very valuable as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're thinking of what are these entities, and next time we're going to talk about nonprofits, which are the majority of our grantees, but if you're thinking of maybe linking up with a college, Heather, who would you go to in a college? Would it be business and industry, or try to find someone in the environmental department where you might be able to sell this type of program?
Yes. Definitely environmental program, or if there's any type of workforce development, and that might be housed under the continuing ed, so sort of the non-credit side of things. But those might be individuals that would be really, really interested in starting that conversation with you guys, or know who's the right person within their own community college to start that conversation.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, as we mentioned, all of the positive leveraging abilities, and the big thing is a lot of the things are in place. So the advantage of government and even CDCs, but I'd say of all those entities, the biggest advantage of community colleges, at least the ones that have an environmental program, is they've got all the structure. They've submitted federal grants, local grants. They're familiar with the WIB. They work with the WIB. So there are community colleges. So they are in the community. Now, if I were to talk about a CDC versus a community college, I would say sometimes, particularly if I contrast it with a university, CDCs are in the community. They're embedded in the community. They're located in the community. Community colleges are usually located in the community, your target area, but not always. Often community colleges, more so with universities, are isolated from the target group that you may be looking at. In other words, they're not necessarily in the opportunity zone, or they may not be a community development corporation may purposely locate in the organizational area where the neighborhood needs the most help. Colleges, of course, have been there for many years or decades. They may be located in a suburb, they may have a downtown campus, but they may not necessarily be directly involved. The nice thing about a community college is usually there's transportation networks that go to schools. In a CDC, you may be right down in the neighborhood. So it's kind of that difference. And of course, as Heather said, that what you want to do if you want to get involved, if you want to start a program but have the submitting entity that's a community college, go to business and industry or the non-credit side of the program. Or if there's a development officer, almost all community colleges have a development office, go to them and explain there is an EPA grant. You're considering developing a grant program for it, but you think that they would be the best entity to submit the grant, particularly if you're small and you're just trying to organize a nonprofit. You could link up with their program. They could bring you the fiscal discipline, the fiscal infrastructure, the administrative infrastructure. They could also bring to you the training experience that will be asked when you submit a proposal. So these colleges.
I just wanted to ask, our program, I'm with Earth Conservancy. We work with our state college system, one of their satellite offices. But yeah, we approach their surveying engineering program. That's what our program focuses around first. They pulled in their continuing ed office And then we worked together to develop the curriculum. And it was very nice that they were able to handle like all the curriculum and course aspects of everything. We're running the grant and managing it, but you know, the actual training itself is off our plate.
Excellent. And you brought up an interesting point, is that if you develop a partnership with them before you write the grant, you can
right.
basically hijack their experience in training. hijack that, is a
no,
strong
that's
word.
Exactly
but,
what we did. Yeah. But it's been very good for them from a, you know, publicity standpoint. Not that they don't enjoy doing the program, but, you know, to show how they're working with the community, you know, and reach out.
Right. And I think there's a negative. The negative I had to talk about in terms of university is a big negative. There's a tendency not to get into the hardcore neighborhoods. It's comfortable on campus. And sometimes in some of these urban areas, it takes, I don't want to say a street fighter, but it takes someone who's pretty hardcore to get into these neighborhoods. It depends on how your program's structured, but there's a tendency, particularly universities, some of the first grantees we had a couple of universities and they just didn't hack it. They were not good grantees and were not refunded because they just really weren't in the community or the target areas, where in your case you are and you're partnering with them. So,
right.
So you've got this collage of different entities and how you want to submit. And I think you brought up a good point. You could, if you're just starting out, you have to decide you want to approach the mayor's office and have them submit, and you plant the seeds, you become a partner of theirs. Do you want to try to find a CDC, which is more innovative, less bureaucracy, maybe more likely that something will happen quickly, go to them? Do you want to go to the community college and talk to them about it? And of course, in all of these entities, if they don't want to become the submitting entity, the next thing you want to do is see if they want to partner with you. And then as we said, once they're a partner, you can use their experience, their grant writing abilities, as it depends how strong a partner. You could even have them doing this fiscal act, have them act as doing accounting and that type of thing. So you've got a lot of latitude. So today, basically, we talked about these governmental kind of entities. We'll talk about the biggie in the next PLC, which is the nonprofits and how they might operate and how they could leverage their resources. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say or a question about these types of entities? Anything? Okay. Well, if you do have questions, you can email us. Just email to Heather. Heather, do you want to give me your email address again?
Absolutely. It's hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
Okay. If for some reason everyone who's on the participant list will get notes on Friday, if for some reason you don't, just drop your contact information to Heather, and we'll make sure that you're on the list. So with that, unless anyone has anything to say, we'll see you all in a couple of weeks. Well, thank you for participating.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.